listening to South Florida's Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
This is God's plan for redemption, and it's good news.
Welcome to the Religious Liberty Report, a weekly news briefing on religious liberty news, a program hoping to educate, encourage, support, and equip you, our listeners, on important issues of our day, but always approaching the issues from a biblical worldview.
Welcome to the Religious Liberty Report. My name is Alexander Alfano. I will be reporting on this first week of March 2024 regarding religious liberties. We're hoping to help equip you with tools to take your faith to the culture, to better understand and articulate your Christian worldview in a way that is courteous, kind, yet bold, uncompromising, and of course, committed to God's Word as our guide. I've often said the idea is not to win debates, but to win hearts, minds, and souls. The church is called to be the moral, the cultural conscience of the nation, of our communities. We cannot just stay on the sidelines and let the culture do its own thing. Thank you for tuning in to the Religious Liberty Report. For me, an inspiration and honor to bring you this weekly report on religious liberty news. The Religious Liberty Report, on the air, working to keep America open to God's truth. Because without freedom of conscience, we have no other liberties. The report is intending to help equip churches, believers, on how to remain faithful to our mission in a culture that is too often disagreeing with our message. This past week, President Donald Trump gave a speech to the joint session of Congress. This past Tuesday, a speech that resonated deeply with people of faith. A speech where he reaffirmed his commitment to religious liberty, family values, and with policies that align with conservative principles. President Donald Trump's speech emphasized the importance of protecting American traditions, defending religious freedoms, and ensuring that faith remains central to the morals and the cultural fabric of our nation. Now, whether you're a supporter or not of President Donald Trump, we give thanks for his support of religious liberty, family values, and with policies that align with conservative principles. Regarding religious liberty, President Trump pledged to protect religious institutions and individuals from government overreach, reaffirming support for faith-based organizations. The president also emphasized family and traditional values, emphasizing strong families, pro-life policies, and resisting cultural shifts away from biblical values. The president also highlighted victories against ISIS and reinforced his commitment to protecting the persecuted Christians, not only in the United States, but around the world. An agenda by the President and his administration, by our Commander-in-Chief. The faith community having a lot to celebrate for a change, an administration that will work with us to celebrate and even champion our values. It's evident that our nation remains greatly divided, so we have a lot to pray for, a lot of responsibility to pray for our leaders, and to pray for our nation. Some takeaways from the speech. President Trump insisting that we've ended the tyranny of so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion policies all across the entire federal government, and even in the private sector and in the military. The president stating, quote, "Our country will be woke no longer." He went on to say, "We believe that whether you are a doctor, an accountant, a lawyer, or an air traffic controller, You should be hired and promoted based on skill, competence, not race or gender. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, reporting on President Donald Trump's speech to the joint session of Congress this past Tuesday, where he called for an end, or rather celebrated, the end of a tyranny of so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion policies. The president went on to comment that, quote, "We have removed the poison of critical race theory from our public schools, and I signed an order making it the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female." The president concluded by saying, "I also signed an executive order to ban men from playing in women's sports." In the audience that night was Peyton McNabb, an all-star high school athlete. President Trump acknowledging one of the best all-star high school athletes in her sport, girls volleyball. Preparing for a future in college sports, Peyton was at a girls volleyball match when it was invaded by a man. A man who smashed the volleyball so hard into Peyton's face that it caused her traumatic brain injury, partially paralyzing her right side and ending her athletic career. The president commented that it was a shot like she's never seen before. She's never seen anything like it. Then he gestured up towards Peyton and said, "Peyton is here tonight in the gallery." He told her, "Peyton, from now on, schools will kick the men off the girls' team, or they will lose all federal funding." President Donald Trump, in his speech to the joint session of Congress this past Tuesday, what would normally be referred to as the State of the Union Address, but traditionally in the first year, the president doesn't give a State of the Union Address. He merely addresses the joint session of Congress. The president went on to describe what he referred to as a small fraction of the common sense revolution that is now sweeping the world. "Common sense has become a common theme," he said, "and we will never go back, never, ever going to let it happen." President Donald Trump commenting on a common sense revolution in the United States and around the world. The president commented that his administration is also working to protect children from, quote, "toxic ideologies in our schools." He referenced a few years ago January Littleton and her husband discovered that their daughter's school had secretly socially transitioned their 13-year-old little girl. That teachers and school administrators had conspired to deceive the 13-year-old's parents while encouraging the 13-year-old to use new name and pronouns. They, them. All without telling the parents. President Trump called it a form of child abuse. And now, the 13-year-old's parents are courageous advocates against this toxic ideology in our public schools. President Trump signed an executive order banning public schools from indoctrinating our children with transgender ideology. He also signed an order to cut off all taxpayer funding to institutions that engage in sexual mutilation of our youth. President Trump is now actively working with Congress to pass a law, permanently banning and criminalizing sex changes on children, forever ending the lie that any child can be trapped in the wrong body. President Donald Trump working to get wokeness out of our schools, out of our military, out of our communities. President Trump telling us that we don't want it. That wokeness is trouble. Wokeness is, quote, bad. It's gone, he said. He repeated, it's gone. And we feel so much better for it, he asked. Don't we? Don't we feel better? You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, talking about President Donald Trump and his speech to the joint session of Congress this past week. Talking about wokeness, talking about extremist ideologies in our public schools, indoctrination of our children, transgender ideology. Turning the page on the report, Pope Francis hitting 3 weeks of hospitalization, but giving a sign to the world in a recording this past week of his frailty for double pneumonia. He's been hospitalized for 3 weeks. Pope Francis observed Ash Wednesday at the hospital as his condition remained stable. He continues to receive medical ventilation during the night as he's treated for pneumonia. On page 3 of the report, 90,000 Palestinians are calculated to have attended the first Friday prayers of Ramadan in Jerusalem. Praying at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in Jerusalem's Old City under tight security by Israeli forces. Reporting from Jerusalem, the AP tells us that in the first Friday prayers of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, about 90,000 Palestinians prayed at the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The mosque sits where most believe that the Temple Mount stood, the Jewish temple. Some saying that there is no doubt about it. One of the walls of the courtyard of the Jewish temple is what is now called the Western Wall, or the Wailing Wall, where Jews have gone to pray for almost 2,000 years since the temple was destroyed in 70 AD. The Romans destroyed the temple, forcing most of the Jews into exile, but a remnant, a small minority, returned and have been praying at the Western Wall for over 2,000 years. And you could even say longer than that, because the first Jewish temple was built under King Solomon, who lived between 970 and 931 BCE. It was later destroyed by the Babylonians under Nebuchadnezzar in 586 BC, with the Jews taken prisoners, exiled to Babylon. But then again, the Persians were victorious over the Babylonians, where Persian King Cyrus allowed the Jews to go back to Jerusalem, where about 50 years later, they began to build the second temple, completed in approximately 520 BC. We know that King Herod, at the time of Jesus, expanded the second temple, but this temple was destroyed. Destroyed by the Romans in the year 70. The Roman general Titus besieged Jerusalem with over 100,000 Jews inside. After 4 months, the Romans stormed the city, killing everyone left inside and completely destroying the city and the temple. The destruction of the temple in Jerusalem, a pivotal moment in Jewish history, marking the end of the Second Temple period, a time when the temple was the chief and most important place of worship for Jews. A Jewish remnant, however, remained and again revolted against the Romans. In this case, Roman Emperor Hadrian. The emperor decided to erase any Jewish link with Jerusalem and with the land where they had lived from antiquity. The Romans erected a pagan building on the Temple of the Mount and then renamed Jerusalem Aelia Capitoline and renamed Israel as Palestina. A reminder of the Philistines who lived on the eastern Mediterranean coast between what is today Gaza and Ashkelon, between the 12th and 7th centuries before Christ. Let's fast forward to the 7th century after Christ, AD, when the Muslim religion is founded by Muhammad, who wrote the Quran in the 7th century. In the 7th century, Arabs, under the Muslim banner, fought against the Byzantines and conquered Roman Syria in 634. Jerusalem was then taken by the Arab Muslims in 638. Two Muslim shrines were then erected on the Temple Mount. The Dome of the Rock Mosque, completed in 691, and the Al-Aqsa Mosque, completed just after the year 700 AD. Believers of Judaism, Christianity, and Islam believe that the Dome of the Rock was built over what they call the Foundation Stone, the site of the historic Jewish Temple on the Mount, and the site of Mount Moriah, where, according to the Bible, God asked Abraham to sacrifice his son Isaac, but was prevented by an angel sent by God. God, then seeing Abraham's faith as sincere, the Muslims, however, deny that two temples existed or were ever located on the Temple Mount. They deny that Jews even have any link to Jerusalem. Muslims considering the Temple Mount their property and prohibiting Jews from accessing or praying on the Temple Mount. The Temple Mount in Old Jerusalem. The Temple Mount is the holiest site in Judaism and the third holiest site in Islam. Why did the Muslims put their mosques on the Temple Mount, the holiest site for Jews, where they had constructed their first and second temples? The Temple Mount in Jerusalem, known as Haram al-Sharif in Arabic, a site of religious significance for thousands of years, revered by Jews, Christians, and Muslims. The Temple Mount of immense significance to Jews, to the Jewish faith, as it was the location of their first and second temples, considered the holiest site in Judaism. The Western Wall, a remnant of the Second Temple, today is still a place of prayer and pilgrimage for Jews around the world. The Temple Mount is also a holy site in Islam, believed to be the location from where Muhammad ascended to heaven during his night journey. A Muslim shrine on the Temple Mount, the Dome of the Rock, the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The presence of the mosque on the Temple Mount is a matter of religious and political significance, and opinions on this issue vary. Some Jews and Christians believe that the mosques on the Temple Mount should be removed to allow for the rebuilding of the Jewish temple. They view the presence of the mosque as an obstacle to the fulfillment of biblical prophecies. But Muslims consider the mosque and the entire Temple Mount complex as integral to their religious heritage, believing that the mosque should remain as a symbol of their faith and their historical connection to the land. Muslims view any alteration or the thought of removing the mosque as a violation of their religious rights, sparking intifadas. What to do with the Temple Mount? Mentioned clearly in the Torah. Why did Muslims put their mosque on the Temple Mount, the holiest site for Jews, where they constructed their first and second temple. Some even challenged the notion that the temples were ever on the Temple Mount, under the Al-Aqsa Mosque and the Dome of the Rock. Were the Jewish temples located where the Al-Aqsa Mosque stands today? Most archaeologists agree that the Temple of Solomon and the Second Temple were on what is today known as the Temple Mount, where Al-Aqsa Mosque stands. A majority of archaeologists and historians who have spent their lives studying the Temple Mount agree that the site of the First and Second Temples is today underneath the Dome of the Rock. Al-Aqsa is about 100 meters away to the left of the double gate. The Dome of the Rock, built over the ruins of a Roman temple to Jupiter, which was in turn built over the ruins of the Second Temple, which was built in turn over the ruins of the Solomonic Temple, completed by Herod in the first century. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report, covering the Temple Mount, Al-Aqsa Mosque, the Dome of the Rock. Some scholars argue that Islam always understood the mountain to have been where the Jewish temples had stood, and that only recently has this become an issue of contention in Islam. Following the Muslims' conquest of Jerusalem in 638 AD, Muslims developed a belief that the former Jewish Temple Mount was where Muhammad ascended to heaven. It was there that the Dome of the Rock was designed to commemorate Solomon's temple and Muhammad's supposed night journey. The Al-Aqsa Mosque was built next to it and completed in 705 AD, referring to the location where Muhammad supposedly ascended to heaven, according to the Quran. In the 20th century, the mosque has become a symbol of the Arab National Movement, the Second Palestinian Uprising, what they called the Al-Aqsa Intifada, that began in September of 2000. Since the year 2000, Jews are forbidden. Any non-Muslim, for that matter, is forbidden to enter the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. This past Friday, the first Friday of the Muslim holy month of Ramadan, approximately 90,000 Palestinians praying at the Al-Aqsa Mosque in Jerusalem's Old City. All of this under tight security by Israeli forces. Thousands making their way from the West Bank of the Jordan River, that Jews would call Samaria and Judah. Thousands Palestinians, Muslims, making their way from the West Bank into Jerusalem after Israel decided to allow men over 55 and women over 50 to enter the occupied territory for prayers. Tensions rising in the West Bank in the past few weeks, but there were no immediate signs of friction during last Friday's prayers in Jerusalem. Turning the page on the report, Hamas brushes off Trump's threat and says it will only free hostages in return for a lasting truce. Hamas last Thursday brushing off President Donald Trump's latest threat and reiterated that it will only free the remaining Israeli hostages in exchange for a lasting ceasefire in the Gaza Strip. The militant group Hamas accusing Trump and Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu of trying to back out of the ceasefire agreement that was reached in January, the agreement calling for negotiations over a second phase in which the hostages would be released in exchange for more Palestinian prisoners, and a permanent ceasefire, an Israeli withdrawal from Gaza, could be completed. Many commentators acknowledging that this second phase of the ceasefire would be the most difficult and where negotiations would likely break down. Earlier in the week, President Trump had written on his Truth Social platform, quote, "Release all of the hostages now, not later, and immediately return all of the dead bodies of the people you murdered, or it's over for you." President Donald Trump writing on his Truth Social platform, warning Hamas of consequences if the remaining hostages are not released. You're tuned into the Religious Liberty Report. Did you know that more than 380 million Christians suffer high levels of persecution and discrimination for their faith today, around the world today? 380 million Christians suffering persecution for their faith. Reported by Open Doors International, an organization dedicated to profiling and recording the persecution of Christians around the world. They publish a World Watch List every year, listing the countries most notorious for persecuting Christians. Again, at the top of the list this year, North Korea, reestablishing its hold on the number one position, where several groups of Christians have been arrested and relegated to labor camps. North Korea, an obsession with ideological purity, where they perceive any outside influence as a threat. Persecution, anti-Christian violence intensifying for many believers around the world. Believers who, in the face of violence and persecution, continue to follow Jesus, to share their faith, risking their lives, their freedom, in some of the most dangerous places in the world to be a Christian. Persecuted believers determined to stay, despite the risks to their comfort, their safety, their lives. In John chapter 1 verse 5 we read, "The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it." The Gospel of John chapter 1 verse 5. Thank you for tuning into the Religious Liberty Report in this first week of March 2025. Jesus never promised his followers an easy path. In fact, he told his disciples that the world would hate them. He sent them out as sheep among wolves. Jesus' words came true in the lives of the apostles, and they're still coming true today in the lives of his followers around the world. Thank you for having joined me on the Religious Liberty Report. For me, an honor, a privilege to bring you this weekly report, reminding you that without freedom of conscience, we have no other liberties. That the idea is not to win debates, but to win the hearts, the minds, and the souls of those around us. We must equip ourselves in a way that we can articulate our Christian worldview, our faith, in a way that is courteous, kind, yet bold and uncompromising, always committed to God's Word as our guide. Let us equip ourselves on how to remain faithful to our mission. In our culture, too often disagreeing with our message. Brothers and sisters, contend for the faith. God bless you, and God bless America.
Thank you for tuning in to the Religious Liberty Report, a broadcast intended to help equip churches and ministries on how to remain